Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
What's good, people? This is Speaking Like You're Thinking Radio once again. I'm your host, Nas Radio, and I'm joined today by a guest, very knowledgeable guest. Had him on last time, and people asked about him, the people who actually listen, because they wanted to hear his opinion. Informed radio host, Mr. Pierre from 790 The Zone. What's good, sir?
Yeah. Man, what's happening, man? I'm glad to be back home, man. I don't know what took us so long, but I'm glad we're back together, man. What's up?
Yeah, man, we got a lot to talk about, man. And we got to get on the same board as far as the schedules, man. I can't do the morning, boy. I cancel so many morning shows. It's ridiculous, man.
Yeah, man. I know how it goes, man.
Yeah, but we got a lot to talk about with the NFL, man. But before we get into that, I figured let's knock out the local NBA, man, while we at it. The Atlanta Hawks, sir, look pretty good, man. These first couple of preseason games, people are looking at the depth of the roster and they're saying they might have something this year.
From me being a Hawks fan, I mean, I've been a fan for since the 12-win season. You know, so I'm not like a guy that just jumped on his bandwagon here. You know, before the Joe Johnson trade, I was down with the Hawks. And I just seen this team just come full circle, though. You know what I'm saying? From an organization as a whole, I felt like one of the biggest things that really turned this franchise around is behind Rick Sun. I feel like Rick Sun really, really changed the culture here in Atlanta and made people accountable. A couple guys that I personally know, Big Dog Glenn Robinson, and he would tell me about stories about the old Atlanta Hawks and how it was just like almost like college ball. To the sense of mentality. Now the mentality has totally changed, and I'm really, really excited, man, about the year, and I believe the rest of Atlanta is as well.
Yeah, you touched on something important there as far as Rick Sun. With his track record, I'm really not one to brag on the guy because his track record is not all of that, but he also has made some smart moves in his times at different spots. But in Atlanta so far, man, I mean, he's batting damn near 1,000, man. He's made some smart moves. Drafting Teague was the real good option. Re-sign Bibby to a short-term deal. Bring Teague in as his heir apparent. And, the rest of the young boys, man. And we're ready to go, man. I like what we have. Jamal Crawford as our off-the-bench scorer. Might be a sometime starter, depending on injuries. We look like we actually got a shot this year at, second round, whatever. We might scare somebody in the second round.
And I think you got the right point there. I believe the biggest thing that Rick Sun did not break up the nucleus of the team with all the young talent. I feel like other Hawks teams in the past or the 90s would have got rid of some of that talent to bring in an old veteran, which I believe Rick Sun got the right idea that we got a good young nucleus full of, you know, first rounders that was drafted by Atlanta. And I feel like that he realized that we have some players that we don't need to move, that they can grow together. And I see part of the reason why another thing that I like he did, and I'm not a Mike Woodson hater or anything, but I felt like he's making Mike Woodson accountable. You know, just I know Mike Woodson has a so-so record with the Hawks and his really claim to fame right now is that he's won more games each year he's been here the following year. And right. I think a lot of that is accredited to the players getting better. I'm not sure if it's him coaching them to get better. I just feel like we just had so many young players. And as they get better, the wins show that. But I'm not sure if that's a credit to his coaching. So I feel like Rick Sun is actually making him accountable on that, you know, by not re-signing him to a deal and letting him play out his last year. Well, you know, let him coach out, rather, his last year with the team. So,
yeah, this year is going to determine a lot for Woodson, man.
Yeah, and it's put pressure on them, and, you know, pressure busts pipes. All right, makes diamonds. So we will see what we have in Mike Woodson this year because, unlike years in the past, we lose games. It's not because of talent. You know, I feel like we can play with the Cavaliers. I feel like we can play with Orlando. There's no reason that we should go out and get blown out by 20 points every time we go on the road. And I feel that's another reason why I kind of question Mike Woodson coaching sometimes. I feel like the teams play well at home because of the adrenaline of the fans, but when you really test your coaches is when you go on the road, when you can play, you know, coach against the elements and get your team to play through that. And it seems like the last 2 years with the Hawks, it felt like we just couldn't win the road game, but we could always win at home when it came down to it because they could get the fans behind them. But when they go on the road, it seemed like it's two totally different teams, and I feel like that's just Bush League, you know?
Yeah,
I feel like you're professional.
You're completely right on that. You're completely right on that. The biggest thing is in the NFL, coaches are about X's and O's first, then everything else. In the NBA, it's about motivation and respect, then X's and O's. So sometimes if your team is not showing up on the road, that's the thing of motivation. And when you got a guy like Josh Smith who, you know, his beef with Woodson for a long time, I'm guessing most of Woodson's beef is he wants Josh on the block. That's the thing of respect. So it's something he's going to have to earn, and he's got a year to prove it. We're going to see what he does.
But the thing is, but the situation with him and Josh Smith is just, I feel, is well overdue. I just honestly feel like, and I just know this person. I've seen a couple practices. I've made my way down to the Hawks Arena when they had the pre-practices one time, I believe 2 years ago, when they had it at Woodward Academy in College Park. And I actually watched it on NBA TV. I believe that was last week, and they had an open practice for training camp. And I kind of see it, and what was, you know, to give me a good idea, and it's just not like I'm just coming in just not looking at it. I saw on NBA TV they had four other teams prior to the Atlanta Hawks training camp. The four other teams they had was the Los Angeles Lakers, world champions, the champions the year before that, the Boston Celtics. Then I believe they had the Washington Wizards and the Denver Nuggets, which is, you know, always a contender in the West. And I watched those teams practice compared to the way the Hawks practice, you know. And I watched the practice of the Celtics. I saw Kevin Garnett giving his all every practice, very intensive, very focused throughout his drill. Guys, what, been in the league 12, 13 years. The same thing with Kobe Bryant, the same thing with Chauncey Billups. And I feel like the Hawks still is kind of missing that guy to really hold it together. I know we made the addition of Joe Smith, which I feel like he's an older guy. He should show leadership, but Joe Smith just does not seem like he's a vocal guy. You know, he don't seem like he'll be the type of guy that'll grab Josh Smith by, you know, the wayside and say, no, you need to do this way. And I feel like even though Bibby's a veteran in the league. I'm not taking anything from Bibby. Bibby's not that vocal guy either, you know. And the vocal guy doesn't have to be a guy that actually plays, you know. it can be anybody, you know. It can be just a backup point guard, you know.
It can be anybody, but it would be more important if it was Joe. Because, you know, Joe's the one who has the respect on the team. And if he was the one to start, go ahead and say, okay, I'm going to go ahead and speak out, then it would mean a lot. And him turning down that extension, to me, that means you're saying, okay, I know there's another market out there where I can be a top-tier player or I can do the second banana thing. But either way, by turning that deal down, to me, he has to show that leadership this year.
Yeah. And it's the thing is with this, you know, with Joe being here, Joe, this city right here, city of Atlanta, it's yearning, you know, yearning for a superstar athlete, yearning. Mm-hmm. Even though Josh Smith is a great player, I love Smooth to death. I've been watching Smooth since AAU ball, but Smooth is not going to be your best player, you know, on your team. Not your go-to player when it comes down to offensive. Smooth can fill up a box score like no other. But Atlanta is yearning for i.e. LeBron James, i.e. Dwayne Wade, Kobe Bryant, the city, the way we embrace Michael Vick, we're really yearning for that superstar athlete in basketball. Now with the Hawks being good and being a great buzz around the city with the Atlanta Hawks, it's just like we're missing that Michael Vick effect. Because, I mean, a lot of people realize when Michael Vick did not win a whole lot of games with the Falcons. We know about his tribulations and everything that he went through with the organization and with his own legal troubles. But one thing you can say about Vick filled the stands every game. Now, with the Falcons being kind of better off now with a solid system, you look in the game now, the club seats are not full, but we're really yearning for that guy that just can put the city on his back and everybody can embrace. And I just feel like Joe's not that guy. And I feel like we need to find that guy.
I agree, Hunter. I don't think Joe's that guy as far just because of his personality and also the way he plays. I mean, it's great the way he plays, but it's not as appreciated as, you know, other styles of play. Now, if Josh would get on that block, man, and developed, yeah, whether it was a jump hook or just, you know, something going across the lane and stayed consistently down there.
Yeah.
Could be that guy, man, if he could ever get that mentality, man.
But the thing is, I'm watching Josh, and I'm rooting for Josh, but I didn't watch the preseason game that they played against was it New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
He's still showing me the same thing I saw before. It's still the jumper, outside jumper, they're still going to give it to him. It's still inconsistent for us right now, and I just feel like I'm not sure if he's not putting the work in or what's the case. You know, if it's mechanics. Because I feel like they're going to give him the shot. You know, once he creates that jump from the outside, he's going to be damn near unstoppable, you know, because people are not going to be able to give him that shot anymore. It's going to make the team that much better. But until he becomes consistent with his outside jumper, I'm not sure how good he can be, you know, and nobody knows. You know, I honestly feel he shouldn't be that far behind LeBron James right now. Well, when you give the God-given talents that both those guys have, they're the only two guys that I believe in the league can go neck and neck with athleticism, you know, with the size and wingspan that they have, with so many positions, yeah. And they've been playing against each other. A lot of people don't realize this for maybe 7 to 8 years, you know, when it goes back to the AAU circuit. So, you know, as LeBron got better and everybody's seen as LeBron has evolved and, you know, got a jump shot, I feel like he shouldn't be that far off. Now, I'm not trying to compare LeBron James. I'm just comparing the growth, you know, that LeBron has had since he's been in the league and the growth that Josh Smith has had. And I felt like that I'm not sure what's the problem, you know.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of frustration. I'm going to say, as a Hawks fan, the two things that make me the most nervous are when Josh gets a rebound, decides to run with it, and I see that crossover at the top of the key, or when I see him lining up a three-pointer, man. Those are the two things that make me most nervous as a coach.
Because you never know what the ball is going to do. You don't know if it's going to go in the third row, if it's going to go in the net, if it's going to go off the backboard. Because, I mean, you don't know, man. The man literally shoots bricks, though. You know what I'm saying? They come out. So it's no, and you have no idea. And I don't believe he has an idea whether it's going in or not, you know? But for one thing I can say about Josh that I wish Joe had, Josh has a star mentality. Whether his game can show it or not, Josh's going to continue shooting that ball, you know. Josh is going to
fire,
going,
man. You see Josh getting excited, man.
Has a fire about him, you know. And Joe just does not have that fire about him. I was telling my friends all the time, and they kind of get on me because they feel like you don't appreciate Joe Josh. I was like, no. Joe Johnson is skill-wise one of probably the best player in the league. Like, he is LeBron James with a jump shot. You know, I tell him that all the time. Now, I'm like, no, he's not athletically as gifted, but he can handle the ball just as good as LeBron. His jumper and fadeaway jumper is 10 times better than LeBron. But I don't understand why he continues to let 6'4 guards, i.e. Dwayne Wade, handle him in the playoffs and he not get his shots off, you know? He does not break double teams. You know, that irks me. You know, when you're the star and you're giving that power, you know, to, you know, much is given, much is respected, you know, and I believe that he needs to take over and he just doesn't sometimes. I'd rather have a guy like what's the guy's name from the Denver Nuggets, number one? J.R. Smith. I'd rather have a guy like J.R. Smith that really thinks he's a star and acts like he's a star and is going to shoot it up and going to break double teams and play with fire every night than have a guy like Joe Johnson that has all the talent in the world and just passive, you know? I want a guy that's out there trying to win, you know?
That's the thing about him being so expressionless. It kind of takes away – it kind of gives you that idea sometimes, like, man, he's not going hard enough. But I'm going to give him this, though. I'm going to give Joe this. With the improved roster – there's going to be a lot better spacing this year. So I think you're going to see a lot better play from Joe because, I mean, let's be honest, man. In years past, you knew Marvin could hit that mid-range. You kind of wanted Josh to shoot long jumpers. So pretty much everybody clogged the lane and junked it up against the Hawks. But I don't think they'll be able to do that this year with the amount of shooters we got.
Uh-huh. And that's another thing. I kind of wish that, and I got a feeling that Joe's going to leave Atlanta at the end of the year. No matter how good we do, no matter how bad, I feel like it might be a team like New York that might be, you know, their scapegoat. If they can't get LeBron, they'll try to package up since they have the cap room to get maybe a Bosch and maybe get a Joe Johnson just because they have the money to do so. But I just feel like we still have a nucleus here, whether Joe leaves or not, that we will be all right, you know. We will be all right as a franchise.
That cap room will be okay. We'll get somebody else in here to
Marvin, yeah, because, I mean, yes, he's the first option, but in due time, I could see Marvin being the first option. I could see this team being a team from night to night. You never know who's going to give you 20, you know. Yeah, we like maybe like the Detroit Pistons of the championship team with Chauncey Billups, Rip Hamilton, and you know, Rasheed Wallace, a team that can give you, you know, you never know who's going to kill you from night to night. And I feel like the Hawks can be that team, and they're that team right now. But I just don't I just can't get with Joe not being a star, you know, and having everything in his hands. You know, a city like Atlanta, a metropolis like Atlanta, with as many people that's yearning for, you know, basketball, he should be thriving on it. You know, I know that's not his personality. He's a country boy from Arkansas, which you know, I have nothing against. I just don't see like he puts forth the effort like he needs to.
Yeah, there's a definite responsibility that comes with that big money. So it's something that he's going to have to step into. But I like what you said with bringing up that Detroit Pistons team to beat the Lakers that year. That Pistons team with Rasheed and Chauncey, Tayshaun, Rip. I looked at the NBA, man. Over the last 25 years, that is the only team to win a championship without somebody who's a guaranteed Hall of Famer.
Yeah, you're right.
That's the only team.
But you know,
without one.
You know, another thing that team had that we don't have is Larry Brown. You know, that team had, you know, a Hall of Fame coach. You know, that's another thing that set it apart. That Hall of Fame coach realized what he had. And he stuck with what he had, you know, and they made it work. You know, he got a bunch of veterans who bought it. Hello?
We deserve some consideration for that, too. Remember, Billy Knight gave up Rasheed in the middle of that season to the Pistons.
Yeah, and I always tell people as a joke, right, Rasheed Wallace is my maybe fourth favorite Hawk of all time, you know. I always tell people that, you know what I'm saying? I always wanted to go get a Rasheed jersey, man, because I always felt like Rasheed is another guy that has not fully hit his potential. Because, I mean, guys like Rasheed Wallace, they and Lamar Odom, with their talent, there's no reason that they shouldn't be the top players in the league. Just with their talent, the overall talent that they have and that they possess, there's no reason that they shouldn't be 1-2 players in the league. Like, Rasheed is, what, 6'11", outside jumper, jump hook in the lane, play defense, handle the ball, run the floor. He can do it all. Lamar Odom can play all five positions if you want him to. These guys are super talented, but they never seem like they always put it all together for them to be that superstar athlete.
Man, something in Lamar Odom says when he gets to the lane, he has to lay it up. He's not trying to dunk. He wants to flip it and lay it up. I don't know what it is. But, dude, you brought up something with Rasheed Wallace, man. You set up a perfect segue. If somebody heard this, they would swear we set this up beforehand. But yesterday, Rasheed Wallace said the Celtics got a shot to win 72 games this year.
Yeah, I saw that. I actually read that this morning. But, I mean, that's the type of attitude that you got to go in and have. And I believe, I'm an honest believer, that you got to have guys like Ron Artest. You got to have guys like Rasheed Wallace. You got to have guys like Charles Oakley. You got to have those guys that are kind of a little bit off on your team. You know, you need those guys on your team. Like, you need that quick tech. You need a guy on your team that is something about to pop off that's going to handle it. You know, that's going to run in there, you know, head first and forget about their responsibilities. You know, I love Rasheed. And I mean, of course, we all know that they might not, you know, not going to win as many games as they are, but you got to go into the end of the season having that type of mentality. You know, it sounds crazy, but, I mean, sometimes you need that crazy, you know, look. You know, I shot COVID shoots up. He believes it's going in. You know, he tries to make it, whether they go in or not, but he actually feels like every shot he shoots is going in. He's not going to shoot it, knowing he's going to miss it.
Yeah, what you're saying speaks volumes, especially because you're talking about we were talking about the Hawks previously. When you think about that moment in that playoff series against Boston where Zaza got up in Garnett's face, neither one of them was actually going to do anything, but the mentality of it, man, it got the crowd so excited, got the rest of the team so excited. You need those guys.
Exactly. And you're right. And for some reason in basketball, that type of stuff fuel your offense. And basketball, as we know, is a game of momentum. You know, when you got those momentum, sometimes that ball just every time you shoot it's going in the net. You know what I'm saying? It draws
right.
every time. You know, and a game like that type of plays and momentum changes with tough guys out there can change the whole momentum of a game. You know, change the whole aspect of how your team is playing. And another guy that, like, you know, back onto the Hawks, you know, I really like to see what I've been seeing out of Teague. You know, of course, I love Teague's game. I thought that might have been the best pick that we can possibly make. I feel like he can turn out to be one of the better point guards out this whole draft. I feel like, of course, you know, he's a shoot-first point guard, but at the same time, I feel like he has the ability to pass the ball if needed. And, you know, of course, Mike Wilson loves to shoot first point guard. Which keeps him from calling offensive plays. That's a whole other story.
You need a shoot-first guy that you can teach, man. I'd rather have a shoot-first guy with the ability that I can teach rather than – I hate to knock this guy, but this speaking like you think of radio – rather than Ace Law who can't turn the corner in an NBA game. I mean, that's just what it is, man.
That's just what it is when it comes out, man. You see, it's just a bad pick, man. I felt like I was picking at that time, and it's a bad draft choice. I'm just so glad that we did pick up Al Horford in that same draft with the third pick.
Right.
But at the same time, it just never worked out for AC here. I was rooting for him, but when it came down to it, he just wasn't athletic enough to get around the corner, like you said, in the NBA game. You know, he wasn't big enough to where he can really guard the big point guard. And if you're not big enough, you better be quicker. You know, that you got to explore them with your speed. And he had neither. And, you know, at the same time, Mike Wilson running, you know, the six-man rotation that he was running, or six-and-a-half-man rotation he was running, he never really got a chance to get out there and really show what he can do. So,
but, I mean, you're not going to get the chance, though. If you can't come in and get stops on defense, and right now you haven't developed yet as far as being able to score too much on offense, as far as turning the corner, I can't play you because you can't guard anybody and you're not moving up. What can I do?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you're right about that. It's a situation where I feel like the Hawks are a lot better off now. And like some small things that Rick's son is doing that I'm not sure if anybody else is really noticing. Like you said, when Joe Johnson decides to, you know, if he wants to leave or stay, he still has Jamal Crawford for another year. So that's insurance, you know. Jamal Crawford is the guy used to start, you know. So if you can't pick anybody up in free agency, you can't really make any other moves to get anything else done, you still got Jamal Crawford, you know, who's a proven shooting guard in the league.
If Jamal Crawford has the right breakfast, hits all the traffic lights, and is feeling good, he might give you 50, man. He's done it like four times.
That's what people don't realize, man. You got a guy, and I love Flip. Flip is like me and Flip went to the same small black college in North Carolina, Shaw University, go fighting bears.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. You know, I know Flip personally, and I love Flip's game and everything. I felt like the Hawks should have just found a way. They're trying to kind of keep him on, but when they made the move for Jamal Crawford, you know, what can you say, man? You know, I just feel like he's a better version of Flip Murray, you know.
He's Flip on steroids. You got to do it.
He's Flip on steroids. You know, Flip is a guy that can come out any night and drop 25 on your starting shooting guard. Okay, Jamal Crawford is a guy that's going to come out any night and drop 40 or 50 on him, you know. I wish Flip well. I know he's with the Bobcats right now, and that can probably come back and bite us in the ass later on. I'm not sure, but you know, I wish Flip well, and I think we're in the right situation, man. I'm so excited about the season. The only thing I kind of wish that we should do more, and I feel like we got to get somebody else to help out Al Horford. I know we picked up Jason Collins, but we know he's a guy to come in and foul Shaq. You know, that's pretty much what his job is basically on. You know, when we play Shaq and play Dwight Howard, he's the guy that's going to be pretty much fouling them throughout the game, which we all know. But I just feel like we got to find us a 6'11 guy hanging on a tree somewhere and just pull him out who can actually run and gun with us, you know.
Yeah.
And because we got a team full of 6'9", 6'10-ish guys right now, and which is cool, you know. We make it work, but we just need that change up. Because you look at my favorite team, you know, well, I want to say my favorite team, my favorite human being, Kobe Bryant, and his team, the Los Angeles Lakers, man, they can beat you a million different ways. They can beat you big. They can beat you with a fast lineup, small lineup, whatever you want to do. You know, right now the Hawks don't have that flexibility where they can, you know, play different lineups and still be good. You know,
right. I agree, man. Well, I guess we touched on the NBA. We're getting started, but we're full into the thick of the NFL season. So we got to go to the NFL. You've been known for your picks, man. You made some good picks the week you were on. But I want to get into contenders and pretenders with you. I want to throw some teams at you, and you tell me which category they fall in.
All right.
Okay, first team, Dallas Cowboys.
Ooh, what? I mean, well, you would try to hit me with the hardest one first, right? I can tell you what is a contender, though. I mean, Texas Stadium is a contender, man. I can't even lie. That stadium is a contender. I'm not sure what Romo is coming up with, but I guess I would have to give them a contender right now. I would have to give them a contender right now just based on talent alone, because the talent is there. Whether or not they band together and play and Wade Phillips, you know, gets it together or not, we don't know right now.
I agree, man. I think they're a contender too, man. Just like you said, from the sheer talent.
Yeah.
Romo's going to have bad games, but he's going to have some good games too. So I think that's going to be enough to get into the playoffs.
Yeah. Man, you're right about that. And the only thing, when we talking about contender, are we talking about contender for playoffs or we talking about contender for the title? You know,
let's,
I think
let's
that's
go contender for playoffs. I think it's a little early to go title.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, I would give them a wild card if they can get it together. I mean, they capable.
Okay. What you got with Baltimore?
Baltimore definitely got to say a contender right now. I mean, Flacco is putting up numbers that nobody realized that he would be putting up in the second year of the league. He's actually out, you know, his numbers are kind of outside of Matt Ryan's, believe it or not, right now. They actually had the second-best offense in the league. I'm not sure after that, you know, that outburst that they showed on Sunday, but I mean, I really like the Ravens. They still have their foundation. A lot of people really noticing, but I think they're really noticing now that Cedric Benson they went over 100 yards that they kind of miss Rex Ryan a little bit right now. You know, their defense, not exactly how it used to be. All right, maybe a possibility they might have Ray Lewis and Ed Reed might be aging a little bit. I'm not sure, you know, but the defense is not quite the same.
After that play Ed Reed made the other day, man, I wasn't
doing
them at all. Did you see it?
The pick to the house. I definitely saw his pick six to the house. But Aaron Reed's going to do that, you know. Aaron Reed is the best we've seen in our time. You know what I'm saying? Just the best playmaker. I would argue with anybody from a defensive perspective in our time. You know, I want to say like in the last 10 years, I would give him that. You know, other than Deion Sanders, which I would actually put him above Deion Sanders because. Ed Reed will put the ball in the box, whether it be a fumble, a punt return, an interception, somebody else's interception, they pass it back to him. Like, Ed Reed will put the ball in the box. Like, he will make the plays, you know. So I can't say he's really slacking, but something's just a little different with that Baltimore defense. Like, I'm quite sure.
Yeah, you're right. They don't give up that touchdown usually. That touchdown to Cincinnati they gave up last week. That doesn't happen usually to that Ravens defense.
Yeah.
Next team, let's go hometown. ATL, Atlanta Falcons.
Oh, man, got to definitely go with a contender right now. I actually betted against them last week against San Fran. I mean, you know, I'm definitely a Falcons fan, but I just thought San Fran for some reason, you know, it made me feel like an idiot now. But I was barely very impressed with the Falcons. I felt like San Fran really, really just kicked themselves all in the foot, man. They felt like they just never really got off us. And one bad thing just happened after another. It just felt like a nightmare day for them. But I definitely got to say the Falcons are a contender right now. you know, until they're beaten, you know, until their defense really, really gets tested, we will see. Because, you know, we really haven't played against a really, 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 really offense that's really on, you know, on all cylinders yet. You know, when we played Brady, Brady was still missing passes and we lost by 14 points, you know.
Right.
He really was not sharp at all, you know. So we played Drew Brees. I have to say we're a contender right now, but, you know, we'll see when we play Drew Brees.
Yeah, that New England game looked like, you know, older brother beating up little brother, letting them know you're not ready yet. And then they
yeah.
came out to San Fran, and they were hitting on all cylinders, and we got to see what that offense is like when it's on.
Uh-huh.
Because, I mean, they
– yeah. And it might just be me a little bit, but Michael Turner just seemed like he don't have the burst like he had last year. And it might just be me, you know. The guy's legs are huge, so, you know, the tree stumps, when they get the rumbling, they look like they're not going fast, but they really are. But I think we really, really was missing Jerry Norwood when he was hurt. I'm glad he's in now. He gave us an excellent change of pace. I believe he's a guy that really, really makes the offense go to a whole other dimension. You know, he opens up everything.
I hear what you're saying, especially about Michael Turner. There's been whispers about that. And
yeah,
the question you got to ask is, was that 300 carry season last year, you know, a factor in throwing him down now?
Yeah, and to this point right now, the guy's just not the same guy to me. So, I mean, I'm not saying he's far from the guy. You know, he can't get back to that level. I know last week he had, what, 3 touchdowns last week or 2 touchdowns? I'm not sure.
Three
touchdowns. But I'm not a guy that's really big on the big breakaway runs. I just like the guys that actually finish their runs. My favorite running back in the league right now is Rodney Brown. Rodney Brown. I just love the way Rodney Brown runs. I feel like Rodney Brown just runs the ball so hard, and I feel like it hurts the defenders to actually tackle him sometimes, you know.
Yeah,
but you know that's a guy. He always finishes his runs, and Michael Turner right now, you know, we'll see.
Just to speak on that, when Saban drafted Ronnie Brown, they were asking him about him, and the one thing he really touched on was when we played against those guys, he sent 4 guys to the training room. So I mean, that gives you an idea how hard that boy is running.
Yeah, he runs ridiculously hard, and he shows effort, man. A lot of people not realize, I believe a lot of stuff that he does, it kind of goes on the radar, and a lot of people feel like it's because of the Wildcat. I really don't believe that. If he was in an offense, i.e. the Cardinals, an offense with a passing game or true passing game behind it, he would put up a crazy amount of numbers. You know, he's in a Wildcat offense. I don't feel like a lot of running backs in the league would be able to take the amount of punishment that he takes on those Wildcat plays and running the ball and catching the ball out the backfield and, you know, touching the ball as many times as he touches it. I just don't feel like they can, you know, to really withstand, you know, the amount of, you know, hits that he takes. So, I think he goes under the radar a little bit, and I definitely see what he does from week to week.
Okay, this next theme I'm going to ask you about, I pretty much know the answer, so I'm going to throw out a second question with it. Okay, I'm going Tennessee, and is it time to put Vince Young in there as a second question? Because, I mean,
I mean, I've been waiting for it, you know, because, you know, it's just to the point, the reason why Kerry Collins was in there in the beginning, Kerry Collins was winning. When you got a guy that's winning, you pretty much can't take him out of the game. You have no reason to take him out. It's the same thing. Or DJ Shockley when DJ Shockley with Georgia. DJ Shockley was maybe the number one quarterback in the nation when he came out of college. Supposedly went to Florida State. Mark Richt convinced him because he got the job to go to Georgia, convinced him to come to Georgia. He was going to be the first great black quarterback for the University of Georgia. He had a guy, David Green, that was in front of him. Not very talented all the way, but David Green just kept winning. And you can't replace those guys. But now, you know, in a situation where Kerry Collins is not winning, well, you know, you're not benefiting us now. You know, if you're 40, almost 40, and you're not winning ball games, it's time to get Vince in there, and hopefully Vince does well, and hopefully Tennessee can gather around them, and, you know, they can actually win a couple ball games before the season over with, and hopefully try to turn this thing around a little bit.
Yeah, I hope to see that too, man. We'll see what he eventually Fish is going to have to put him out there because, you know, they're going to have to decide whether they want to, you know, pay that amount of money to a guy if they feel like he's not that next dude.
So, and we know in NFL it's a cutthroat league, you know. So if they released him, if he didn't do well, I wouldn't be surprised, you know. And if they released him and a lot of guys jumped to pick up Vince Young, I wouldn't be surprised either, you know. And I feel like Vince Young has a lot of ball to play in his career, you know. A lot of people still don't realize, man, it was just 2 years ago this guy was a rookie of the year, you know. And this guy had three miraculous comeback wins in the NFL, you know. And I hate for people to just say this guy was just a great college quarterback, which he was at Texas. Hell, he won a national championship by his damn self, you know what I'm saying? not a lot of people really give him credit for that. But, and you know, when he got to the league, I remember the game when he went back home to Texas and played the Texans. And, you know, he really, really showed out and, you know, had a scamper for maybe 40 yards that was kind of thickish, you know, as when he played the Minneapolis Vikings. Right. The guy has some talent. He really, really needs to tune in. And I believe hopefully the situation has humbled him. Hopefully this situation can, you know, get this guy on the right track. Because, I mean, I'm rooting for him, especially in a city where, you know, the passing, you know, by him being so close to Eric McNair, I feel like the city really of Nashville needs Vince Young in there to do well because, I mean, they haven't won a game since Eric McNair died, you know. So,
This is the NFL, man. You go from the penthouse to the outhouse real quick, man. We see
real quick
Cedric Benson fall all the way out of the league, and I guess the hunger and, you know, being humble drove him, and now he's leading the league in rushing right now.
Yeah, and you're right, man, and vice versa. You know, you can go from being a laughing stock, you know, the Cardinals, to being in the Super Bowl. You know, it happens like that. You know, it comes down to players buying into the system and really believing in what they're doing and getting the right guys around the system and really putting in the effort, man.
Okay, my last one, man. Do you believe in those Denver Broncos, man?
Oh, man, I've been betting with those Denver Broncos every week. I'm down with them, man. I got to be down with the Denver Broncos, man. The defense, that's what's really, really impressing me with them, those guys. I felt like the best thing they could have ever done is adapting to that 3-4 system. And with Mike Nolan at the helm, with defense coordinator, he's probably one of the best pickups over the offseason that a lot of people weren't really, paying attention to. And move Elvis Dumervil to the outside linebacker spot rather than the defensive end spot. And this guy is just causing havoc. You know, I really like what they're doing. DJ Williams has reemerged to be the player that everybody thought he was. And I'm really, 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 really excited about the team. I'm happy for Josh McDaniels. I thought the guy was, you know, a small brat that, you know, was kind of getting, in under his, you know, a little bit too much in like, that he wasn't really ready for. But the guy is balling, man. I mean, he's coaching his ass off from week to week. And I feel like they really got something going in them. Kyle Orton is playing out his mind. I'm not sure how they're going to play on the road. But right now at home, I like them every game.
All right. I agree, man. Well, that's my contenders pretend. You made your picks. I agree with all of them. We're going to see how that plays out. Now, I want to give you a starting schedule for NFL season. Say these are your first five games. You play the Giants, the Rams, the Lions, Buccaneers, and the Panthers. And next week you got the Chiefs. Now you would think you would have, you know, a pretty decent record with that schedule because you would say, okay, the Giants, if we're not a great team, they're probably going to beat us, but you should probably win the other ones.
Yeah, you're right.
The schedule of the Washington Redskins. Coach Winston is on the hot seat. I mean, he's on fire right now.
I mean, rightfully so, man. And I've been a Redskins fan. I was actually a Sean Taylor fan, big Sean Taylor fan from way back in the U. I actually picked the guy out because I played safety in college. I picked this guy out, true story, on special teams with one of my friends over the house. And I was like, man, this guy right here is going to be the truth. And I told him right then, I'm not a prophet or anything. I said, man, this guy right here, special team, freshman year. said, man, this guy right here is going to be a truth, man. Like, I just, and I started doing research on the guy, and the guy just started going berserk, you know. So I naturally, you know, became a fan when he got with the Redskins, and I've been rooting for him ever since, even though he's passed. And I'm just tired of him now, man. I'm just sick of it, man, because I just feel like Jim's on, and I feel like it really, really is not all Jim's on's fault, man. I just feel a lot of it's just Jason Campbell, man. Jason Campbell just, he does not, I mean, he, and the difference between him and Jamarcus Russell is, I feel like Jason Campbell puts in the work. He puts in the work. The reason he's bad is because he just does not, you know, have a lot of pocket awareness, and he just doesn't have it, you know. But Jamarcus Russell on the other end, I feel like he doesn't put in the work. And I feel like that's the main reason why the Redskins are not 4-1 right now, are not, you know, not closer to 5-0 than what they should be. Because I just feel like that the quarterback position, as your quarterback goes, your team goes. And that's, I believe that's a clear reflection of why we are in the position that we're in right now.
Can I get a prediction? Do you think Campbell's going to end up being like a journeyman backup, sometimes starter type of guy?
I feel like Kerry Collins is going to go on his David Carr run, you know, for the next 8 to 9 years after he get up out of it. Maybe not this year, but the following year. Maybe next year, you know what I'm saying, he'll be a pawn for the you know, rookie quarterback that we might draft this year, whether that be Bradford. But knowing us, you know, knowing our owner, we'll probably draft Tebow, who was the biggest name. You know, that's just how we rock, you know. That's just how we rock out there, you know.
Right,
I mean, we overpay and we underpromise. You know, that's our motto, man. We overpay, guys.
Snyder is the new Al Davis, man. Headline.
You're right, man. And it's a couple owners in sports that I truly, truly love. And Al Davis is being a guy that I love. But I just feel like Al Davis, just, you know, see now right now. And I mean, he still has the power, and he's just an old guy that just, you know, stuck in his old ways right now. And nobody's going to really shake him out of it because, I mean, he has the power because he built the franchise.
Right.
But Snyder is a guy that, I mean, you love to play for owners that are passionate about the game, Jerry Jones, owners that's willing to pay, you know, because you're in a situation now where not a lot of owners are willing to actually pay, you know, for the players, you know, happening. They're going to put them in the number one facility. They're going to, you know, take care of their players because they really want to win. But, Arthur Blank, prime example. You know, these are owners that really, really, truly care about their team. Rather than, you know, not Ralph Wilson of the Bengals, you know, that doesn't, you know, not a big spender. You know, plays in, you know, as long as he gets his revenue money at the end of the year, he's all good, you know. So I root for those owners, you know, but at the same time, I just feel like, why can't these owners ever win, though? Is it because they always paying these guys? Because I always joke with my friends. I tell them, no guy on the Cowboys and nobody on the Redskins and nobody on the Raiders are ever having taken a pay cut to stay with the Raiders or the Redskins or the Cowboys. I don't care who they is. They maxing out, you know. They are maxing out. Nobody saying, you know, pulling a Teddy Bruschi, you know, Tom Brady, get this, but I'm going to, you know, I'm going to stay get this because, you know, that's cool because I like the organization. You don't catch that in those three franchises. People getting jacked, you know what I'm saying? They hitting the bank. They breaking the bank. If I can get, you know, Al Haynesworth, if I can get $100 million, I'm going to get $100 million, you know.
Right.
And I think that's a direct correlation, you know, with our, the way our franchises are, you know.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, though, as good as Haynesworth is, he's a great defensive tackle, but you would think you would only pay a defensive end, great pass rusher, that kind of money. Unless you already have a great pass rusher, I don't see how you give a tackle that much money. Even though Haynesworth is a great player.
And Albert Haynesworth is a dominant player. You know, guys like him and Chris Jenkins, they whoop their players' asses, whoop they over every time, though. You know, every time. If they don't, they all game long. Like, they whoop their ass every play. And that's all you want, you know. And I sat up and I've been watching Albert Haynesworth. You know, I'm trying to, you know, my first worries was, you know, by me being a fan of the Redskins, I was like, man, oh, hell, man. We done gave this fat guy all this money, and now he's going to get fatter on us. You know what I'm saying? But I have been impressed. You know, one game he got carted off and came back out. You know, the guy is really, really putting in the effort. The actual, you know, defensive ranking and defense has improved with him being out there. You know, it's opened up for the other guys to get around the edges and do things defensively. And defensively is not our problem. Of course, we got D'Angelo Hall out there, who I absolutely hate as a corner. But I love it.
I guess to say that within 2 weeks, they hate D'Angelo Hall.
Yeah, but the thing is with D'Angelo Hall, man, for every play that he gets, he's going to give up four. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
He's going to give up four. Just look at, for God's sakes, man, look how he got carried this weekend by the quarterback, who is probably the worst quarterback in the NFC for a meaningful first down. All you got to do is get him down in bounds, and
right.
You get the ball back, and he gets dragged by the quarterback, who is the worst in the NFC for a first down. Like, come on. You know what I'm saying? I just don't get it, you know. But
we
one thing
last week. I just want to throw this in real quick before you go to it. Last week we came to the conclusion that D'Angelo Hall is a great nickelback. If he's your nickel,
yeah.
He's a good player. But
yeah,
if he's starting, you got trouble.
He's the modern day. But I don't even want to give him that because I was gonna say he's the modern day Ray Buchanan. But Ray Buchanan made more plays. I mean, he actually, you know what I'm saying? I want to say he's the modern. Yeah, Big Play Ray made plays. You know, he gave up plays toward the latter end of his career with the Falcons. But Big Play Ray did make plays. Big Play Ray came up and made, you know, tackles here and there. You know, of course, he wanted to be Deion, but he wasn't Deion. But he was a quality pro. I would love to have Ray Buchanan, his prime, over there rather than D'Angelo Hall, you know. But one thing I can say about D'Angelo Hall is he got one of the best agents in sports, got to be, because this guy done broke the bank three times, you know. He done got fat contracts three times, you know. Not
somehow,
pro, most players
somehow.
Only get two. Some players only get one, you know what I'm saying, that be quality pros. But this
right.
guy done hit the bank three times, and I'm talking about really, really hit it. Three times, fat signing bonus.
And
so,
half of the player his contract says he is.
He's not half the player his contract. He's not a third of the. He's worth one. He probably played worth one whole contract, spread it out, broken down his whole career, you know?
Right.
Let alone the other three $20 million guaranteed deals or whatever he's pulled up, man.
Sum it up with his signature game. Was playing against the Eagles in T.O. when T.O. went over 100 yards. And
he shut them down. I guess he should break down and get Moore a little bit of that because Moore showed hyped him up like he really did something. I mean, the only thing he did was kept T.O. out of the end zone. T.O. kind of kept himself out of the end zone. The one thing that made me realize that D'Angelo Hall wasn't the player that we wanted him to be when I noticed that every time we play a marquee receiver and here you are trying to be a marquee cornerback, they busted him for 100-plus. Hines Ward busted him for 180. He busted him for 180 in the dome.
The one-shoe game. Oh, I never
yeah.
forget that. He lost the shoe and outran D-Hall to the corner just about.
Yeah, I mean, it's you name the player. Anytime we played against a marquee player, I want to say Torrey Holt, but Torrey Holt was pretty good, you know, during his time.
No, Donald Driver slanted that man to death.
Anybody that was worth that was anybody, you name them. Steve Smith, every game during the division, every time, crushed him. It was almost like you knew when you watched the game. Oh, we got the Panthers this week. Oh Lord, we knew what it was gonna be. It wasn't surprising to us, you know. It was not surprising.
Since we talk about bad corner play, man, I got to throw this out because I know you saw this, man. Dre Bly of the 49ers gets a pick, and for some reason he decided to go Deion real quick, man. Threw the hand back. Mike runs him down, causes fumble.
Yeah, it's been talked about a lot, man, and it's been talked about all over. You know what I'm saying? this play that Dre Bly tried to do. And when I watched it live, I was like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe this. It's going to be on everything, ESPN. Like, this is going to be another Vernon Davis blow-up. Like, I'm thinking, like, not only would Mike Singletary take off his pants this time, he's going to run out there butt naked this time, like on the field, to snatch him by his face mask off of there. Because I just knew Mike was going to lose it. Like, I knew he was going to lose it. But, I mean, he to his credit, he just kind of like, you know, just didn't lose it right then. But I'm sure it was some words when he got in that locker room. But, what can you say, man? What can you say? And I'm not trying to play, you know, talk radio and try to be the guy that's, you know, always sitting up here saying, you know, these guys don't respect the game. I always want to show up. Football is a game where you have fun. But you're not having no fun when you getting your ass beat, though. That's my thing. There's no fun in it when the rabbit got the gun. Like, when you get your ass beat, you need to be humble. You know, just be humble. Well, I don't care if you scored a 103-yard touchdown and y'all down 30 points. You need to be humble about that. And I just don't get it. You know, I just don't get it.
You also need to be in the clear before you start acting the damn fool.
But you know what it was? You know what it was? And I can tell you exactly what this was. And a lot of people might, you know, a lot of listeners of the show might sit up here and be like, well, he might be right about that. Well, it was the case with that, Dre Bly had a dream before the game that I'm going to catch this pick. And I'm gonna do the Dion, and I'm gonna unchain my strap, my chin strap, and I'm gonna do this from the 30 all the way in. Like, that was his dream, probably. Like, so he's just replaying his dream, not realizing that he was dreaming. You know what I'm saying? Because he had to be dreaming, you know, that he was gonna actually do that all the way in. I mean, did you see Matt Ryan? Matt Ryan was 10 yards away from him, you know. I don't understand it.
What is the worst play? That Dre Bly play or the Leotis McKelvin running out of the end zone versus New England play?
The Leotis McKelvin play?
It was a dumb play. It was a dumb play by Leotis, but I feel like Dre Bly got, you know, he looked, in the end, looked out to be more of a idiot afterwards. It was about kind of like you. It's sort of like he's trying to make a play. He didn't go out there and purposely get drilled. Like, you know, he didn't go out there and purposely run out there and get blasted by, you know, Brandon Merriweather, who I feel like is playing excellent ball this year. I feel like this guy is playing Pro Bowl ball this year. If you haven't, you know, actually watched him play from guy to play his position, the guy really, really got it going on right now. But I feel like Dre Bly, his intentions were wrong from the get-go, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was from the get-go. And I'm not sure if you saw the Donnie Avery play in the end zone.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw that one live, too. You know, I'm watching it because I'm watching the Red Zone package now. So, you know, and that's like another good thing that kind of keeps me from spending money all the time to go to the game when I can watch every game live and watch all the touchdowns. It's great. But this guy pushes a guy away and does a stanky leg. Like, he was like, no, let me do this, you know. Let me show up. Like, and I'm thinking to myself, I had to think twice, like, maybe did these guys come back? Because I can't see the score. Like, did these guys come back or something? This was a big play? Yeah, look, it's 31-10, meaning it was 31-3 before he scored. I just don't understand it, man. But this guy knew, like, before going into the game, on Saturday and on Friday, when I score, I'm going to do the stanky leg. And that's just what it's going to be, regardless. You know,
regardless of time, score, anything, I'm doing that.
He don't give a damn. If it was 100-0, my mind already made up. I'm doing the stanky leg. You know,
that 10 years from now, when he sees that play, he's going to cringe and turn away from the TV, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because, I mean, it's embarrassing, though, man. It's embarrassing. And I mean, I hate it to make it like it's a race issue, but you just don't see the white players in the NFL doing stuff like that. I just don't see that from week to week. You know, I don't know. I know it ain't that many of them, and they're in the minority when it comes to being in the NFL, but you just don't see the guys, I don't know, I don't want to say showboating, but They just don't make those type of plays, you know.
Yeah,
I just don't.
It's a dumb play. There's no way to defend it. I guess we could just, you know, go to another subject, man. Because ain't no way you can defend that, man. I mean,
like, yeah, I don't understand it. But which way are you wired for that to go down the way it went down? But you know,
right. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Who was your youth league coach, man? Who told you that was okay, bro?
I have no idea, man. I honestly, a lot of these guys, they can't celebrate in college. So soon they get to the league, man. They in the zone, you know, and then they can celebrate. Now they can act their ass on national TV, you know. Then they can do anything that they want to do. And, you know, this is their time to shine. This is their 15-second platform in front of millions. To act the fool. I mean, you know, they take some advantage of it.
I don't mind somebody acting a fool. Just do it with time and score in mind.
Within context of the game, right? Yeah.
But on to the next thing, man. Both of the Manning brothers, man. Manning brothers are on fire right now.
Yeah, they are. I feel like, you know, I'm not a big Eli fan, and I kind of feel like Eli. Anybody could kind of, I don't want to say anybody, but I want to say any of the top 15 quarterbacks in the league can come in and do what they're doing with the Giants, with their running game that they got going and their offensive line doing what they're doing. And their receivers making the plays that they're making. I just feel like they're just a well-coached team. Like, you know, you're not going to catch them on a down week. You know, they're going to be ready to play, meaning you're going to have to beat them from week to week. You know, you're not going to catch them like San Fran with the pants down this week. You know, I just feel like they're a well-oiled machine. And when it comes to the Colts, which I'm a big fan of, I always have been a big fan of the Colts, just with Tony Dungy in general and the players that they always, you know, find themselves, you know, picking up, like, you know, black college players like, you know, Robert Mathis and Antoine Bethea, just giving those guys chances. I always looked at them and, you know, admired the team. I really feel like the Colts are getting right back to that level that they were before. And I feel like Peyton Manning did the preseason, well, as of right now, the MVP of the league.
Yeah, no question, man. I don't know who would try to make an argument against that, man.
The only guy that people might consider paying, you know, and say would be Drew Brees. But, you know, to Peyton's credit, Peyton hasn't been shut down yet. You know, Drew Brees kind of kept, you know, caught a couple lumps against the Jets, even though they did pull that game out, courtesy to, you know, Dan Schaffer taking another one to the house. Seems like you see him do that every other week now, you know.
The guy
really got it going on. And not a lot of people really know this, but coach for the Pittsburgh Steelers, Mike Tomlin, actually played with Dan Sharper in college, like on the same team in William & Mary. Like, not a lot of people realize that. You know, Mike Tomlin's not a real, real old guy, but Sharper, man, he just really got it, man. He always got it, you know. Some people just get it. You know, you understand. He just read the quarterbacks well, and he, when he gets opportunity, he does not drop it.
Right. And what you said about the Giants, man, is true, and I want to add something to it. I think New England, before everybody would agree, was the franchise everybody wanted to be like. I think all the defections with all the coaches and GM, everybody, you know, they're losing everybody. I think the Giants are now that franchise, man, with Jerry Reed as GM, Tom Coughlin as the coach, the great offensive line, great defensive line, you know, the two most important things. I feel like they're the franchise everybody needs to try to emulate.
Yeah, and I feel like it comes down with stability, good coaching, and people buying into the system, man, and they draft well, man. I give credit, Isaac Reese, I believe that's his name.
Yeah.
The guy really drafts well, man. You know, the guy really, really, really drafts well, and most of the players that they got now that are actually developing the good players. Right. And they're flourishing, you know, guys. They drafting are really, really panning out, and these guys are late round picks, like you said. And that's when you're doing a good job scouting. When you're getting your late round guys and they actually make plays for you, look at the players that they even pull in later rounds. OCU Mayor, late round guy. Really, really, really paying it. Mario Manningham, a later round guy that's panning out for him, you know. You just name them. These guys just really, really come out and play regardless of when they're drafted.
Yeah. Another thing, I don't know when the last time you've seen a punter get a game ball, man, but the Cleveland-Buffalo ugly game, 63 victory for the Browns, he dropped five punts. Four punts inside the five.
Mm-hmm. I feel like he deserved the game ball. As ugly as that game was, he deserved that game ball because when it's you switch field position, the way he was switching the field position with Roscoe Parrish back there, and you know keeping them pinned down in the five, it makes a difference though. It makes a totally difference in the game, especially when you're dealing with a struggling offense like the Buffalo Bills right now. I mean, he deserved that game ball in that game. And I feel like punters and kickers are players too, you know. I'm not one of those guys that feel like they're not
Cleveland
players.
The Browns won a game with 23 yards passing.
Yeah, man. And I feel sorry for T.O. right now. You know, I really feel sorry. But I kind of feel like the guy is really learning from this experience, but I feel like he just wasted a year of his career that you know, he could be used. The guy is only getting older, you know what I'm saying? I've been, you know, hearing mumblings around about a possible trade between them and the Chicago Bears, and we'll see how that, you know, that shakes out for Terrell Lawrence.
That's a move that needs to happen, bro. The Bears need a weapon, and he needs a new home. That's a move that needs to happen.
And that's a thing that hopefully, you know, With the success that Braylon Edwards had on Monday night, it's a possibility. It's a strong possibility that you know, that might help the Bears out in trying to, you know, go ahead and you know, accepting that trade and making that trade happen, you know. The only thing I can really think about is they gave up a first and a third and a future first for Jay Cutler. You know, when they got Jay Cutler, so I'm not sure how many draft picks they will actually give Buffalo. But, you know, hopefully it works out, man, because I love to see T.O. scope, man. I live to see him hitting the zone because, you know, T.O. was the originator of the touchdown dance, it seemed like. He rejuvenated the game with the touchdown celebration that he had because he touched the box so many times. So,
and T.O. had that way of making the whole stadium, if he was on the road, not want him to get there, and he would still get there. You know what I mean? It was just
emotion
of rooting against him, and he still was able to make plays.
Yeah, the guy really was an entertainer, which all these guys are supposed to be entertainers because, you know, that football is entertainment. But this guy really, really is a true entertainer. Say what you want to say about, you know, destroying team, this, that, and the other. But T.O. put butts in seats, and T.O. scores touchdowns. And when he scores, he's going to let you know he's cold. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's entertaining. When he did the Usain Bolt, it was entertaining. You know, when he grabbed the pom-poms, it was entertaining. You know, when he played with the San Francisco 49ers and ran to the 50, that was entertaining. Like, I mean, I can remember those moments because, I laughed. Like, you know, I'm like, this guy really thinks about this, but he knew he worked so hard. And he's a guy that I respect more so than a lot of other people because a lot of people not really being in the game and just talking about the game, they really, really can't tell you how much this guy had worked to be in the position that he's in now. He worked almost as hard as Obama tried to work to become the president because this guy wasn't a natural receiver. He did have natural hands. He came from a small school, you know. It wasn't a lot of people that really thought he would be something, but he worked his way in to be the best wide receiver by our era. You know, I know we were in the Randy Moss era, but Terrell was the best wide receiver of my time, you know, with me watching. You know, I did catch the tail end of Jerry Rice, but for us, you know, right now, last 10 years, T.O., hands down.
Yeah, he's been that dude, and when it comes down to it, he's going to be in there on the first ballot, man.
Yeah, I mean, regardless of what sports reporters do, the guy should be a first ballot Hall of Famer. And even if he isn't, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. And it really doesn't even matter because Michael Irvin wasn't the first ballot Hall of Famer. So I'm not wouldn't be surprised if they wouldn't allow T.O. to, you know. But that's just how, you know, that's the reporters, you know, that's their way of trying to sort of getting back. But it really doesn't matter. You know, the guy didn't put up more touchdowns than anybody but Jerry Rice, you know, when it comes to their receiver position. And that's all you can ask for. You know, I know he hasn't won championships, but, I mean, every season goes by, it's 31 losers and one winner, you know. And it's not because of him that they didn't I win the championships that they, you know, that he was in. He was always on winning teams besides this year. So, you know, hopefully it works out for him.
Yeah, and speaking of the media, Jamarcus Russell, do you think sometime at this season, man, he's going to have a Ryan Leaf moment where, you know, the reporters are kind of picking at him with a stick and he just kind of loses it? Because, I mean, they're going to get him, man.
No, see, the thing is, Jamarcus,
not expected.
See, Jamarcus Russell is a different type of guy. Like, I kind of know some guys that, you know, grew up around Jamarcus Russell. See, Jamarcus Russell way when he snapped is not going to be typical of the way Ryan Leaf snapped because he's not wired that way. Mm-hmm. The way Jamarcus Russell snapped is going to be something like this. You know, Jamarcus, how did you play today? You know, I was straight. You know, well, you threw two picks. Yeah, that's what they say, you know. so are you working to get better? Yeah, I mean, I go to practice every day, you know. Well, you know, I see you got, you know, earrings in here. How much are those cost? Oh, they about $3 million a pop. You know, I'm getting $30 million guaranteed, right? You know that, right? Oh, all right. That's Jamarcus' way of snapping. You know, that's how, because he's the type of guy that you give him a whole bunch of money, and hey, I'm paid. You know, I'm rich. I'm rich. Hey, say what you want to say. You know.
Right.
But that's his mentality, you know, and that's going to be
draft.
Yeah, that's going to be his thing, you know. It's not going to be snapping and running up and jumping on somebody because he don't care, man. He paid. He can go right back to Mobile, Alabama, right now with the amount of money he done made and do anything he want to do. You know what I'm saying? And by him going way out there to Oakland, they don't you know, it doesn't appease him. It would have been a whole different story if he would have played for somebody like the Saints or playing with somebody that was close around that area down there that made him work for it and really have pride in. But he went to the Oakland Raiders, man, and dysfunctional family from the get, you know, and got all the money that he wanted. Now he's good. There's nothing they can do about it.
Your scouting department, like the way you're describing him now is like he likes the game, but he doesn't love the game. If you're scouting somebody and they don't seem like they love the game, will die for that's what they want to do all the time, you don't make them a number one pick at all.
Yeah, you're right, man. You're right, man. It starts at the top. It always starts at the top. And the thing is with the Oakland Raiders, man, It's almost like they always drafting on potential. And they always drafting on potential and putting too much emphasis on combine. And when you draft on potential, you have to wait for that potential to be, you know, you to make it, you know, to achieve the
right
potential, whatever you have. But when you draft on production, you draft players that produce right now, you know. You draft on production. That's that, you know, just look at the New England Patriots. They draft on production. That's
right.
Why they drafted Brandon Merriweather. That's why from year to year they trade down from their first-round picks to get second-round picks because their scouting team is to the point where they already know that the second-round picks that truly should be first-round picks, people are going to fall back on because they might have didn't make the time or they wasn't the right size. They're going to draft those guys, and they're going to fit them into their system because not because they're good for everybody, but because they're good for them and their scheme. You know, that's what they realize, and that's why they continue to be good, and that's why teams like the Raiders continue to be bad. That's why they draft Haywood Bay. You know, and my thing is I don't mind them drafting Darius Haywood Bay, but somebody in their department should have said, okay, if this is the guy that we like, let's not take him seven. So first of all, we're going to give him a whole bunch of money that he might not really be worth it,
let's just trade down. Let's go get us do something different. Let's get us a second round pick for somebody and trade down, you know, maybe to 20, because he's probably still going to be there at 20, you know.
Right.
And if he ain't there, if he ain't there at 20, we can trade up and get him at 19, you know.
Right.
Like, and we still save ourselves $10-15 million, you know, in the long run. But you know, I just don't understand it, man. It's just like you're dealing with somebody that don't have a clue, and it's like you're taking candy from a baby. And just look at this, man. And if I'm the only one that's really noticing this, continuously trades between the Raiders and the Patriots, like beyond the Richard Seymour pay.
When that phone rings and it's Belichick, Al needs to hang it up immediately. Don't talk to him.
Yeah, because, like, they like, hey, man, he's like, man, I got this clown over here watching, and he's going to go for it. I got a duck. Like, let me call him. Let me go. Yeah, let me call him. You know, he don't know. He ain't got a clue.
Yeah,
he's been doing that. Man, he's going to trade that. Don't get it wrong, man. He's going to trade the long snapper. And, no, he's going to actually trade the long snapper. And the punter, because he's fast, you know, he's going to trade the fast punter for Numney Austin Wall next year in the first round pick. I wouldn't be surprised. Like, it's coming, man. It's coming.
It's
definitely
like
coming.
It's like trading on Madden.
He's like Madden. Like, you know, that's exactly what it is. But, you know, it's crazy. Like, for the simple fact, they traded for, I mean, okay, I love Richard Seymour. I love him at Georgia. You're a good player. But you trade for Richard Seymour, who's only going to be here 1 year, who you're going to pay $10 million to this year, for a first-round pick for next year that you know you're going to be sorry. So that first-round pick that the Patriots just got this year is going to be like a number two or number three. Like,
And Seymour's probably going to go back to New England during the
offseason. Yeah, he's going to go right back to New England at the end of the year and sign for the league minimum. Like, this is what's going to happen, man. And it's sad, though. Like, I'm not a GM. Never been a GM. Never had aspirations of being a GM. But this is what I see. This is what's going to happen. Like, and this is what everybody knows, but it seems like the Raiders and their organization. You know, and then you got this whole situation with Tom Cable. He got charges. He running from the folks and trying to coach from city to city. Like, you can't even make this stuff up, though. How can you make this stuff up?
We should be in episode 5 and they're talking about Cable punching one of his assistants.
This is like Days of Our Lives, man, where people die and they come back. This is what this is. This is more unbelievable than that, man. You know, really, like,
I'm telling you right now, when Brett Favre eventually retires, if he's about 43, 44, he can get Al Davis on the phone and negotiate a contract. I guarantee you.
I promise you. What everybody else says,
he's going to get it.
Al Davis is the type of – this is the type of organization, man. They like the girl with the credit card, right? The rich guy. I want to say this. Yeah, they the rich guy with the credit card, right, that don't look at price tags at all. Like,
mm-hmm.
I like that one. Get that one. They don't test drive the cars. They just like, ooh, I like that car. It's red. It looks fast. I want that car. They don't check the mileage. They don't test drive it. They just buy it. You know, they don't care. It don't matter. There is no price checking. No being frugal. No none of that.
No Carfax with the pickup.
Nothing. Like, no, they don't sign the paper, man. They don't do no credit. They just, all right, go. I like it.
Well, man, before we get out of here, man, I wanted to just get your picks on the last. I picked out some spotlighted games for the week. Just want to get your ideas on these games before we get out of here, man.
All right.
We got some good games this week, though, man.
Oh, yeah, Baltimore, man. Good games.
Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
Got Giants at Saints, Arizona at Seattle, Chicago at ATL, and the Monday Nighter, Denver at San Diego.
Oh, man, we got a nice little stable. The thing is with the NFL this year, man, it seems like the bottom-tier teams are just at the bottom of this shit, you know? I believe that's every year. You know, every year you have the Rams. But this year we got the Rams, we got KC, we got Oakland, we got – and the team that's down at the bottom now don't feel like we'll be at the bottom at the end of the year. I feel like they'll find a way to get 6-7 wins. It's Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I like what they got going right now. I know they haven't won any games yet, but I kind of like what they got going right now.
Yeah, but they're actual games, though. They're not like what the Rams and, you know, Cleveland and a couple of those other teams are playing.
Right. They're not that type of game. I mean, Tennessee is another story, but Tampa, I really like what they're growing into. Tampa, I like Detroit this year. Detroit is actually competing in games this year, you know. Jim Schwartz has done wonders already. I know they won one game, but they've been in three, you know. So I really like where they're going. But with the picks this week, run them off. You know, I'm going to go ahead and give you my answers on those picks, man, and tell you, you know, them locks that I got going for this weekend. And hopefully I can go undefeated.
Let's put it out there. Baltimore at Minnesota.
That's a good one, man. And I'm going to go with the 40-year-old virgin on that one, man. I got to go with Favre on that one. I know that's crazy, man. You know, that's basically me saying that the Ravens are going to lose three in a row, you know what I'm saying, from going 0-3. But I just feel like they're going to find a way to get it together, man, being in the dome. And hopefully that shows up. And I believe AP is going to find a way to get out on the edge. And, you know, he hasn't really made a lot of noise the last 2 weeks. I think he's going to kind of break out on this turf this week.
He do. We got Giants at Saints.
Yeah. This is going to be a good one. And I really, really like the Saints to pull this one out.
Okay. Yeah, I'm, that's the game I want to see the most, that Giants Saints.
Yeah. And I'm thanking everything all the way out. I just feel like the Saints are going to pull this one out now. Some kind of way, I feel like when it comes down to it in this game, I feel like the Saints, not a lot of people really saying it, nothing about it, but I feel like they made a lot of strides with their defense this year.
Yeah, they look like a totally different defense.
Arizona
at Seattle.
Arizona at Seattle. I like Seattle this one. I chose to pick against Seattle last week. I think they're going to actually, really do big things this week and go ahead and pull that one out. Seattle is a tough place to play. Everybody knows about the 12th man that they got up there. I really look forward to them winning this game.
Okay. Chicago against the home team, ATL.
Man, I like Chicago. I like Chicago in this game. The reason why I like Chicago in this game here, I feel like defensively, Chicago really don't play too many major problems for Falcons offense. But at the same time, I feel like our defense has not really been, you know, with a steady run that you're going to continuously give them with a good offensive line and a good quarterback combination. We haven't really played that all year long, seems like. Played Jake Delhomme. And the one team that we, you know, played against that, you know, could beat you with the pass as well as the run, we lost, you know, and it could have been worse than what it is. So I like for the Bears to win this game. You know, I'm going against the home team with this one, but this is kind of like what I, you know, feel like that's my upset of the week.
You think Forte's going to break out for Chicago?
I feel like they're going to, you know, they're going to give him the opportunity to break out, and I feel like he's going to run for 100 yards against us, and I wouldn't be surprised when he does go for 100 on us. I'm not sure it's going to be like he's going to be running wild, but they're going to continuously, commit to the run, and I feel like that's going to pay dividends against them in Atlanta. A lot of people are going to be going home sad on Sunday. You know, you heard it first here. And I love the offense now. I mean, I love the Falcons. I like the Falcons and everything, but
our defense is a good defense. And Mike Peterson, you know, if he comes to play and he makes plays, it's a whole nother thing. But I feel like we put too much emphasis on him making plays. You know, if he doesn't make the play and Abraham doesn't make the play, then the play don't get made, you know.
That's a bad situation there, man.
And that is really a bad situation, you know. And I like the way Bierman been playing, and I feel like the defensive tackles are, you know, are playing a lot better. But I like for Chicago to come in and win this game for the upset.
Okay, the Monday nighter, the 5-0 Denver Broncos at the Chargers.
At Detroit?
No, San Diego.
San Diego. This game right here. I'm going with San Diego. I like the Chargers in this game. I like the Chargers mainly because they're playing at home. Denver, I feel like they're going to be reading, you know, the press clippers a little bit, and, you know, they're kind of getting away from home. And even though they're going to be on the big stage, I kind of like for, you know, Dan Sproles to, you know, make a couple plays and be the X factor to get the Chargers over the hump, man. We got the Chargers, a team that's pretty much been good for forever, and for on paper been having one of the best teams on paper the last 4 years. When you know actually look it down on paper, for God's sake, they had Michael Turner as the third string running back at one point in time. You know, this team is stacked and always has been stacked. So I just feel like it's their last time, and hopefully they can do something, man.
Yeah, I mean, right now they're kind of the forgotten team. Before the season, they were still, you know, one of the front runners. Now they're the forgotten team, and they're going to be dangerous this year.
They're talented enough to beat you. And they are kind of hurt up right now with lights out, not playing right now the way he needs to be playing. You know, he's kind of really lingering with his injury. But I'm hoping they do well this year. I'm hoping they do well, man. Because on paper, man, these guys are stacked, man. You just look at the corners, you know. You got Camardi on one end. You got Jammer on the other end. You look at the pass rushers, you know. You got two of the premier pass rushers on the side. And you got your stalemate in the middle.
Make plays. Weddle.
Weddle makes plays. You make the key addition. With the linebacker from the Dallas Cowboys, I can't think of his name, from Tennessee, Kevin Burnett, he makes a big difference. You have Castillo, one of the best 3-4 defensive ends in the league. You go down the list and you go offensively. You got Marcus McNeil at the left tackle. You got one of the best offensive lines in the game. You got LaDainian Tomlinson. You got Darren Sproles. You got Phillip Rivers. You got Vincent Jackson, who is emerging best receiver in the league. You got Chris Chambers. I mean, these it just goes on and on with just quality players. Like, you can't name players like this on everybody's team. Like, you can't go down the list with quality guys like that, you know, and just good guys. And we talking about guys that are top five in their positions at one point in time, you know.
It's a lot of known guys.
Kamari might be. I mean, he's been in past top five corner in his position. So is Quinn Jammer. Has been maybe top five corner at the most in his position at one point in time. You know, and you just go down the list. Like, lights out, been the best pass rusher, other than DeMarcus Well, of the 3-4 defense end linebacker types. I mean, the guy does it better than anybody. You know,
but
Antonio Gates.
A baller right there. Gates all day, man. Yeah, we about to get out of here, man. But before we do, man, I saw some exciting plays and just the overall toughness that I seen, man. I just wanted to make sure I shouted out the boy Josh Nesbitt for Georgia Tech. I wanted to get your thoughts on his performance, man, this past week.
Josh Nesbitt, man, I'm a really root for the kid, man. I love what he's been doing, man. The kid has the heart of a warrior. I mean, the guy wasn't, you know, the guy that was supposed to be in the system. He kind of got in a situation where, you know, the coach got fired and a new guy came along. And it really hasn't ran that type of wing T system, you know, with a triple option. But the guy comes in and he gives it his all. And most of the time from, you know, a lot of sports talk radio, he gets a lot of flack when, you know, things don't go right and he's not as explosive, you know, as he should be. But the guy's not Tommy Frazier. You know, Tommy Frazier was recruited by Nebraska to do what he did. You know, this guy was a guy that was, you know, supposed to be a pocket passer that could scramble a little bit. You know, it was never in his intentions to do what he's doing now. But the guy, he gives it his all. And right now you're seeing the dividends. You know, I wasn't one of those guys that when it came in, I saw Jonathan Dwyer was up for the Heisman. I really didn't pay a lot of notice to it because I understood that, you know, the triple option is not the type of, you know, offense that even if you're, you know, a Heisman candidate, they can really shut you down and your team can still succeed. You know, if you want to shut down the dive, they'll just, you know, go around the side with the jet sweep or with Josh Nesbitt. You know, they can kill you either way. It's like pick your poison pretty much. And, I mean, I really like what the guy's doing, man. He has a big target in DT, Demaryius Thomas, man. The guy, you can't speak – his play right now speaks volumes. He single-handedly kind of, you know, kept Georgia Tech in the game and won the game. I felt like the biggest play in that game is when he actually stripped the guy to get the ball back after the fumble, man. And from then on, you know, it was hell on wheels for, you know, Bobby Bowden, man.
Yeah, he stripped the linebacker, got the ball back, and then ran the clock down. Basically,
yeah.
I mean, he's meeting linebackers head on.
Yeah, you're right. The guy's a warrior, man. You know, you can't speak enough about him, man. And a lot of people don't realize, you know, on another statement, I feel like the state of Georgia is in the next coming years is going to do a complete 360, you know, where the elite players will always go to Georgia if they went to any school in state. Well, now they're going to really consider Georgia Tech, you know, especially defensively. Because you're in a situation defensively, you know, you still make plays and you in Atlanta. You know, it's not a hard place to sell for a college athlete. You're going to come to Atlanta and you're going to get a great degree from, you know, one of the most elite institutions in America. And you're going to play on Thursday nights and you're going to play in big games in ACC. And if you're an offensive guy, you're going to score touchdowns, especially a guy that he can just plug in. Just say, for instance, if he had a Percy Harvin rolling around the edge. Like, imagine how many big plays we would have with him at an A-back, you know.
Right.
Yeah, well, Arnett, not even him, but, you know, just that type of quality athlete, which Georgia Tech does not have now, but they will get, you know.
Yeah, like you said, it's always about transition. When you're starting something over, bringing in a new coach, the guys who are left over have to buy in to set up the next class. And those guys
– you're absolutely right.
And they made it a success, man. And, you know, it's good to see. We'll see how they do this week, big game with Virginia Tech. I don't know how they can pull that one off, but, hey.
Yeah, I'm going to be down there for this game, and, you know, I'm really enjoying it. I'm really, really looking forward to see what they're going to do against Bud Foster and that defense that, you know, he always gets out there, the lunch pail D that they always seem to, you know, give Georgia Tech just hell, you know. So hopefully they can, you know, come out and really do what they've been doing. And I mean, they got what it takes. But we'll see now. I'm looking forward to seeing a great game. Hopefully my boy Morgan Burnett can make a couple plays back there at the safety position because it seems like when he make plays, they win. When he don't, they struggle, you know, a little bit. They struggle. They get plays made on them. So hopefully they can get it together, man.
Okay. Any shout-outs or closing statements you wanted to make?
Man, no true shout-outs, man. Just want to, you know, thank you for, man, letting me get on the show, man. You know, appreciate, you know, everything that, you know, let me allow to get on here and, you know, speak my mind a little bit. And
hey, man,
can't wait for the next time.
Glad to have you on. Always opinionated, informed people. That's who I always want, man. And that's what you're giving. So it's always there. This is Speaking Like You're Thinking Radio. We'll be back next Tuesday. Hopefully I can get Pierre to come in for another hour, man, and we'll keep it rolling.
All right, man. Appreciate it, man.
Peace. All right.
Yeah.